Welcome back to Christians Talking Business. This is Kurt Storing, your host. This episode is brought to you by Proclaim Podcasting. We help Christian coaches and entrepreneurs save hours of time and headache every week by providing a totally hands-off, done-for-you podcast editing service. You record the episodes, we take care of the rest, including audio, video editing, show notes, social media clips, uploading, and scheduling. Visit ProclaimPodcasting.com to book a call. I am very pleased to welcome Bob Lodick to today's episode. Bob, thank you for being here. And this is a circular nature connection come to fruition, man. First of all, how are you doing? Thank you so much for being a guest on today's show.
I'm doing great. It's a fantastic day. Excited to be alive and really excited to be on the podcast, Kurt. So thanks for having me.
Amen. Yeah. Let me just tell that story briefly, because it's so wild for me. You didn't know me until a couple of days ago, but I have known about you in my journey as a pivotal piece of my entrepreneurial journey simply because of your business, now called Seed Time. At the time, I think it was called ChristianPF.com. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So guys, in 2012, I had quit my job. I had a new son ready to be born any moment. And I thought what anyone responsible does is I'm not going to get a job. I'm going to start my own business. And I Googled how to make money blogging. For some reason that came up. And you got to remember, this is 2012. Okay. By this time, Bob was already an OG, 2007, I think he started. But this was fairly new. And so I Googled and I came across the website ChristianPF. I wasn't a Christian at the time. This came about 10 years afterwards. And I found Bob's site and I clicked a link, which led me to smartpassiveincome.com with Pat Flynn. And I followed his niche site, Duel, I think it was called. I built my first affiliate website. It made my first dollar online. I remember it was 32 cents, my first AdSense click. And since then, that was 12 years ago. And I've now created a whole bunch of businesses that have served my family and have made ends meet, all because your SEO is dialed in and I found you.
Yeah.
So that is my full circle moment. I was like, I'm starting this podcast. I got to have you on. So praise God. Thank you so much for that article, man.
That's awesome. Well, and it's funny, like, so that article I wrote in 2009, and we can get into all my story of how I got there if you ever want to, but it was really interesting because I wrote that article and I was determined not to write anything about making money online or making money blogging until I was actually making a full-time income. Because at that point, similar to now, there were tons of people talking about how to do it who weren't actually doing it. Like they were just, we're going to talk about how to make money online by talking about it. And so it's just a cycle of people not knowing what they're talking about, saying things. And I'm like, I'm not going to add to that noise until I have the conclusive proof of making a full-time living. So I released that in 2009, and the number of people who have come back to me, similar to your story, who have built, really seven, even eight figure businesses, from that point, like it cracks me up. Cause I had no idea. I mean, all I can see is the analytics. Yes, a bunch of people are reading it, but I had no idea that I would end up meeting real people who were actually impacted by the work that I did kind of on a whim. It's just the beautiful thing of how God is tying everything together. And it's really fun looking back like that. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate you humoring me. And I feel the same way. Like my most recent project ad work, there was, 60, 70,000 people on Instagram, and you get the numbers and you're like, okay, these are numbers. And then you get the DM, you did this or your thing did this. And it's like, oh my goodness, thank you for that reminder, different. Because otherwise those analytics can start to get very impersonal. Yeah. The show is all about digging into businesses. And for you, you've been doing this 17 years. Is that right? You've been blogging,
I guess,
since 2007?
2007. Like, that's where we are. Like, it sounds
that's
crazy. Yeah. And one of the funny things about that, too, is I was talking to my wife, Linda, about this just the other day. Like, when I started doing that, it was so much on the bleeding edge, that I knew no one, doing anything online. Definitely not blogging and trying to make money from it. Definitely not any sort of online business. And so I just kind of assumed those first couple of years that this is how it's always going to be, that I'm just always going to be the loner who is doing this thing that no one understands. And then here we are, 17 years later, and it's so common and there's so many of us doing it that it's just all shifted so much. Like, business is online business now. At that point, it was the weird thing that this, weird little 20-something is doing, but now this is business. And it's weird if you have a brick and mortar and you're not online,
Yes.
So anyway.
So tell me about the beginning of this then, because, I also started blogging in a sense, more so on the SEO side of things, not quite so personal, but I followed a ton of blogs during this day because I love the personal side of it. Here's what I'm doing. I don't know if it's going to work and it's working or not. And I also know one of the big guys in the personal finance space, not necessarily Christian personal finance, but Ramit. I think he started blogging when he didn't really know all that much other than what he knew in his head rather than in his life. What was your transition into writing about personal finance? And were you already at this time like crushing it? Did you know a lot about personal finance, or was this your way to learn in public?
Yeah, it very much was learning in public. And the biggest financial blog from whatever that early era, we'll say, was Get Rich Slowly, written by a guy named J.D. Roth. And he was the guy that everybody was looking to that got the most traffic and all the eyeballs and everything else. And that's exactly what his story was. I mean, he literally started the blog like when he was just clueless and just shared his journey as he was going. And honestly, like, I think just in general, for a lot of creators, whether it's podcasters or YouTubers or Instagrammers, bloggers, whatever, I think that model works better. There's an authenticity that just works with that, that is different than maybe our parents' generation, where they wanted to find the expert who knows it all and we want to do this. Whereas we're looking for people who are real and are going through the problems like a couple steps ahead of us, but who just recently went through the thing, not like 35 years ago, you know? And so I just really like that model a lot. And that's what we did. And that was a big part of, and I didn't know that. That was just all I knew to do. And I wasn't an expert, you know, I was just figuring out as I went. And for me, like specifically, it was personal finance. We were in a mess financially. And I was discovering that the Bible talked about money. And as I started uncovering this, it's like, whoa, this is crazy. Like the Bible actually is practical advice for today. It was written thousands of years ago, you know? And so that's where our blog kind of began, like the intersection of the personal finance space with the Bible talking about money and all that, you know?
Man, yeah, that is such a good topic to dive into, actually. And I'm just going to take this into whatever direction sort of comes out from the conversation. We'll get back to the plan direction. But you want to go in a little bit about like your journey with being the guy who knows it versus being the guy figuring it out? Because along the way, presumably, it did switch. I mean, whether or not you present it like that differently now, I'm not sure about how you feel about that. But you were the guy who was figuring it out, and then you figured it out when it comes to making content. Because I struggle with this in dad work. I had done a lot of work to save my marriage, become a better dad, no longer be the worst part of my family's life. There was a sense of, if you just listen to me, I promise this works. Like, please just listen to me. And I found it hard to be the guy learning on the fly. And that was a lot of personal stuff. It was a lot of identity stuff that God's been burning out of me. Praise God. Yeah. But how do you see that now, having been on the other side? Is there space for both? Or is it always like, hey guys, I'm just figuring it out?
Yes. I don't know. Like, I think there's space for both. I think the answer here is just humility. Because the truth of the matter is, like, no one ever arrives. Like, and so, yes, I have plenty of financial experts who I still look up to, but I've come far enough to know that they don't have all the answers. And they might be doing a really good job of pretending like I got everything figured out. I know exactly what everyone should do for every situation. And it's just not true. It's just not true. And so there's a humility aspect that I think is really important as creators to just maintain that. I don't know, like there's a curiosity kind of aspect of this as well, just like we're acknowledging that there's still more to learn, there's still more to grow, and that by doing that, you stay in a little bit, or it helps you stay in more of a position of the friend next door sharing what he just learned, rather than the final authority on this topic who, whatever. And I think you can do. And honestly, I think it carries more weight, you know, to what you're saying, the guys, trust me on this, this actually really works. I think it carries more weight when you're not the, because like going back to a Bible term, like I think of the Pharisees as the extreme of like authority. I know everything. Just do what I say, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know what example would look like of that today, but we all know, we can feel the difference when we hear someone preaching from up on a metaphorical pulpit about whatever the topic is versus someone who is like in the trenches, in the weeds. Man, I have gone through this. I'm going to share what worked for me, you know? So I don't know. Like that's kind of, I still do my best to maintain that. But to your point, like the curse of knowledge component of it gets harder for me to get back to the point 17 years ago where, you know, we were in debt up to our eyeballs and complete mess. Like I can still remember some of those feelings and those sensations, but they're getting further away. And so I have to work really, really hard to remember what it was like being in that moment to be able to better communicate with that person, you know?
Right. So has that changed then? Like the question that comes up for me is target audience, right?
Yeah.
You are necessarily going to have to preclude some people who you might be able to help now because they're further ahead, more like you versus, yeah. Man, that's 17 years. Because even for me, like my stuff I was teaching was, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I'm going, that doesn't really feel the same to me. I don't feel mm-hmm. that anymore. So what's yeah. that tension been? How have you been able to stay with your target audience? Or like, have you guys changed? Do you have a higher ticket offer? Like what does that look like in the business?
Yeah. So obviously this is a matter of strategy. And so it just depends on what it is you want to do. And some people will start and have an audience that grows with their level of expertise. In general, we have sensed, I just feel like the Lord has called us to the church and I fought that for years, you know? And so that wasn't what I wanted to do, but I've just been really, really clear. It's become more and more clear to me, especially over the last few years, that this is what God has for Seed Time to do, to help and to serve the church. And therefore, that means that we can't, all of our products can't be advanced personal finance. A lot of this is more entry-level stuff now on specific topics. But the thing that I work really, really hard to do. So for example, we have a budgeting course, helping people start a budget. We have an investing course, helping people start investing. Now within that, like, you know, we have modules in the course that get a little bit more advanced. And so we'll talk about investing in crypto and we'll talk about some of these different things. I nerd out and I go really deep, but this can't be the main thing that we are doing because that's not the main group that we're serving. So anyway, so we have multiple topics that we're trying to cover, you know, with everything that we're teaching. But the other part of that too is whether it is a simpler topic, a more basic topic, I do my best to present it in a fresh way so that someone who has read 10 other financial books on that topic will be like, oh, that's a good way to think about it. I've never thought about that. And that's always been my goal. It's like, how do I present this in a fresh way that grabs the people who have a basic understanding of it, but it wouldn't hurt to see it from a different angle, as well as the people who have never heard anything like this in their life. And we've worked really, really hard to do that. So our book, Simple Money, Rich Life, like the reviews have made me feel pretty excited that God helped do that because we've just gotten a lot of reviews that kind of confirmed that. So I'll leave it at that.
That's really good. Thank you for sharing that. And are there strategies for that content creation that allow you to see things in a new light, or is this just sort of a gift that you think you have got?
I think there's a gifting there, but in terms of a strategy, I think the biggest thing is like I consume a lot of information and try to, you know, so I've read 100+ personal finance books, pull that in, digest it, and figure out how can I best communicate this to serve the people that I want to serve, but do it in a way that isn't just rehashing what everybody else has said. And just by starting with that question, whereas what a lot of people do, I think they'll consume all this content and they'll say, all right, this is a thing that everyone's saying. So I'm just going to say the same thing that everyone else is saying, you know? And so like in terms of tithing, for example, so I, you know, say I've read 15, 20 different Christian financial books, you know, and honestly, like, I feel like every single one of them say the same thing about tithing in the same 3 or 4 chapters about tithing, in which I don't necessarily disagree with what they're talking about, but I didn't want to put that in our book because every other book has that. And so we barely mention tithing in our book. And it doesn't mean that that's not something that we deem to be important. It's just, why do I need to say the same thing that everyone else said? And like, and the fact of the matter is that I don't, you know, I tell people this all the time, like, I don't think yelling at people for not tithing is going to increase generosity across the church. Like, we have found that the way to inspire generosity is through inspiration and not through, you know, browbeating or guilt or shame or anything else like that, because that never worked for us. But I was inspired when I saw other givers living a generous life, displaying what it looks like to steward and manage and use what they were entrusted with for God's glory in his kingdom. And that got my wheels turning. It's like, oh, wow, that looks fun. How do I do more of that? How do I do that? And those were the things that got me, made me become a more generous person. And so that's what we try to lean into. And, you know, we're getting in the weeds here, but just to kind of give an illustration of that.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I'm looking for an example. So I appreciate you sharing that. And that is so true. Like you guys have said something about longing to earn all you can.
Yep.
And at first that was like, whoa, are you sure about this? Like, is this biblical? And then you're like, look at the problems out there. Like, we need the people who are stewarding their finances reasonably and responsibly and it, for the glory of God, so that we can have all the money possible to do the work, because money is the thing that's going to get the job done.
Yep.
Like, that was one of those for me that was like, oh, yeah, nobody's ever really put it like that. It's always been this, am I allowed to make money? I don't know. Am I putting God first? I don't know. And that was very helpful. It felt like it freed me up to just want to make money.
Yeah. And what's so cool, I mean, we stole that from John Wesley. Like, this was, John Wesley wrote about this, all the time, like in his day, which whatever, I don't know, 150 years ago or whatever it was. And so he was a preacher over in England. And what was so fascinating about him is he actually had one of the highest salaries in all of England when he had hit the peak of his career, which was about modern day equivalent of about $2 million a year he was earning as a preacher. And, you know, most people would be like, there's no way preachers shouldn't be earning that much money. But what was so cool about him is he understood he could take his natural God-given giftings to speak and to write and to use as many of his hours to do that rather than wasting his time on Netflix or whatever the equivalent was then. And so he did that. He leaned in that to impact the world through his giftings, the byproduct of that being more money back to him. And then he could turn that back around and throw it back into the kingdom. And so the quote that he said that changed my life is, he said, I seek to make as much as money as I possibly can. I seek to save as much as I can. And by that, he meant reducing his expenses. So I reduce my expenses as much as I can. And I do both of those things so that I can give as much as I can in advance of the kingdom. And when you understand it that way, as a simple math problem of, let's get as much as we can here and then reduce the input, that leaves a big wide margin here that we can now give into, funnel into the kingdom. And I was so deeply impacted by that, that that became, you know, our MO for years, and then ultimately became the framework for this book and everything we write in it, you know?
Man, that's amazing. Okay, so let's go back to the business. You're blogging. People think you're crazy, presumably. Can you tell me about the progression of this? I've got a number of like milestone questions along the way, but I'm curious if you, first of all, did you ever think this could be a business? Probably not, because it's 2007. And second of all, like, what was the, do I do courses? Did you ever do AdSense? Was it affiliate marketing? What has been the progression of the actual business driver?
Sure. Yeah. So no, I didn't really think it could ever become a business. I mean, there was somewhere in my brain where it's like, I guess in theory, like we could put AdSense ads on. There's probably some AdSense sites that are making whatever $30,000 or $40,000 a year, which is what I was shooting for at that point. But like it just felt like a big, big long shot. And honestly, like I'll get in a little bit of a story. So 2007, I started. I remember my first 7 cents with AdSense. That was the first thing we did, was throw AdSense on the site. Remember that first 7 cents in our tiny little apartment, jumping up and down with Linda. And so I worked on that blog, you know, probably 5 to 10 hours a week for the first year. About the 1 year point is when I got laid off in 2008. I was working at a financial services firm during the financial crisis. All the firms are getting bought out. We got bought out. My department got eliminated. I got laid off. And so as I got laid off, I have this blog that's earning me $100 a month at that point, which is not bad, but it's $100 a month. It's not a full-time income. And so I get laid off and I start going, looking in the, you know, classifieds and whatever, monster.com, like looking for jobs. And I feel like the Lord's like, nope. And I'm like, nope, what? What does nope mean? Like, nope, what? And I've, you know, and it became really clear. It's like, no, I don't want you to look for another job. And I'm like, all right. So what am I supposed to do here? Like, what's your idea, God? You know, what do you want me to do? I'm newly married. I have a wife. Her parents are already like, I don't know about this kid. And now if I'm going to tell them, I'm just not going to get a job. Like, you know, So anyway, I start praying about this, and it becomes really clear that the Lord's wanting me to work on this blog full time. And again, so I start reminding the Lord that this is 2008 at this point. Most people don't know what a blog is. I only know of one professional blogger in the entire world. Darren Rouse, a pro blogger, is literally the only, him and maybe Steve Pavlina, I guess, are the only two in the entire world who I know who are actually making a full-time living blogging. And so I'm telling God, wow, this is such a terrible idea and all this stuff. And then he just, you know, doesn't change his mind and just says, I want you to do this. So anyway, I stopped looking for another job. And long story short, like I got a few months later, officially got my final day of work and transitioned to a full-time blogger making $100 a month. And I'm like, God, what the heck are we going to do here? We had AdSense on the site. That was how we were making $100 a month. And over that next 9 months, like we just watched God show up one thing after another, like the traffic just really started picking up a lot and started getting some big open doors with big links from other sites and stuff. And anyway, 9 months later, we went from $100 to basically $4,000 a month, which was more than my old day job. And then it was another 6 or 9 months later and it doubled again. And it was one of those things where it's like, man, I am really thankful I obeyed God, you know, because it would have been so easy to not do that because it was so insane. It felt just absolutely insane. So
yeah,
that's the first part. I can get into a little bit more of the progression from now. You want me to do that?
Yeah, please. I mean, first of all, we're a number of episodes in now and they're all about to be launched. And every single person is like, I had this thing and I didn't want to do it. And then God told me and I listened and I was like, oh, God, you're crazy. And then it just worked. So like just another notch on God's belt for having it all under control. Anyway, but yeah, so you're doing the AdSense. It's growing. You got a lot of traffic coming in.
Yep.
What was the progression? Because right now it looks like you're doing courses. Was it always like that? Or did you try a bunch of stuff?
Yeah. So at that point, it was all AdSense and pretty much all SEO traffic. You know, SEO is pretty easy at that point. It's like you find a question that someone's asking, you put that in your title, and you're going to rank for it. And it was pretty much that simple. And so I was just answering the questions that people were asking on Google. And while trying a little bit to build a brand, but at the end of the day, I knew the name of the game was traffic. And so how do I get as much traffic as I can? I was nerding out on AdSense optimization and placements and all that stuff. And I loved geeking out on that. But it was all AdSense at the beginning. And probably for the first 6 years, somewhere in there, I discovered affiliate marketing and realized, wait a minute, they're giving me 30 cents a click, but I could get $30 if I just put that link here myself and they go sign up. And so I started transitioning some pages to basically removing the AdSense ads for the ones that where it's like consistently seeing the same ad over and over again and just got on the affiliate program instead. And then I saw, okay, all right, so this works a lot better. Cut out the middleman. And so, yeah, then I just began doing more reviews over different things, you know, and that was something that, you know, I had a, you know, there's plenty of affiliates that just like will hawk any product they can find that pays well. And it's like, I always, if you're going to do this right, like actually use the product, actually talk about things, the good and the bad, the things you like, and just in terms of building a brand, it just makes so much more sense. It works better. But so anyway, so that was a big part of our business for a long time. And then I would say like probably launched our first course probably about 10 years ago, but it was just kind of like a side stream of revenue. And we just transitioned more and more probably 5 or 6 years ago into courses and that being our primary source of revenue. And again, like we just made another within the last year, a massive shift in our business because we've been selling courses to individuals for the last again, probably a decade, but in the last year, we've just really sensed the Lord leading us to serve the church. And so we created a 6-week financial course specifically for churches. And so now we're having to learn, all right, how do we sell courses to churches? Like, what is this like? You know, and in the buying cycle, like we've discovered is completely different. And so we have a good number of churches have gone through our program, but you know, normally, or it used to be, we just get somebody to our landing page and they buy within 10 minutes, or maybe they talk to the spice and they buy the next day. Whereas this is, all right, we need to go back and talk to the board and we need to have the pastor review it. And so it's like 3 months later, it was just very, very different. But anyway, we're starting over again in some ways, you know.
Oh, interesting. Man, you've just got like the old AdSense, like three ads on a page. Where am I going to put them? Mm-hmm. That's growing through my head now. Ah, oh, those were the good old days. I remember those days. Man, okay. So though, it seems like then mostly courses, transitioning into church courses. Are you guys still doing like a bit of the affiliate and ad stuff on the website?
A little bit. Okay. It's just not, it's not the primary thing at this point. So, and it's really narrowed down to really focused on what is going to serve our audience. So it's less of what can we rank in Google for with an affiliate review and more of what is going to be a big win for our audience that I would talk about anyway, but they just happen to have an affiliate program. And that's the main time we're doing it.
Have you guys tried anything else? Has it always just been like, oh, this works. Oh, this works. Oh, this works. Or have there been like big projects that didn't work along the way?
Oh my gosh. I mean, 90% are failed projects. That's
okay. Can you talk about some of those? Is
failure after failure after failure after failure. And occasionally something works. I mean, just in terms of like, let's just talk about the courses, for example. I have created multiple courses where I'm like, this is going to hit so big and people are going to need this. And it just falls flat. And it's just really disappointing. Like, you know, when you pour all this work into it and now we've gotten to the point where we don't really launch anything without some sort of pre-sale, just to kind of confirm and validate that this idea is actually something people want. But two of our best selling courses, one of them is what we call a real money method. And it's basically our unbudgeting approach. It's like all the other budgeting thing didn't work for us. This thing did. And I never wanted to make a course on this. I just thought it was too simple and too easy. And Linda like insisted that I do this. And she hounded me for years to make a course on it. I'm like, hon, all right, I'll do it, but it's just too simple. No one's going to want it. Anyway, we've sold over 2,000 of them at this point. Like, that's a number, but the anecdotal things, like I've literally had people run up to me and give me a hug and say that course saved their marriage and stuff, where it's like, I don't understand how God is doing what he's doing through this thing. But my point in all this is that, a lot of my ideas have just completely fallen flat, but sometimes you just have to look. I mean, what your spouse is saying or what other people are just keep asking for, even you're like, that's too easy, like blah, blah, blah. So sometimes it's just sitting in front of your face, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are always the hardest ones for me, because particularly my personality, I'm like, I'm going to get just this most insane, in-depth, like people need to know this. And I've done the same thing as I've launched this thing and it's crickets. And for me, at least, it's kind of a shot in the gut. And one of the questions I want to talk to you about was longevity. Like, have you just always stayed on this particular business, or have you gone through periods of boredom? Oh, I actually want to do this. Have there been other businesses, either offshoots or totally different, or have you just faithfully worked day in and day out on Seed Time?
No, I mean, it's been all of the above, I guess. Like I had many years, particularly around 5 or 6 years in, where I felt so purposeless. And we had been on a really good run of, basically the first 7 years of the business, all we saw were revenues increase just the entire time. And so year over year over year, just increasing, increasing, increasing. And like, you start to get addicted to that, which is not good. And it becomes really unfulfilling after a while. Like it's, again, like I'm a numbers guy. And so I was just constantly chasing more numbers. And it's like, yes, we're doing something that's helping people. And that makes me feel better. You know, again, we're not, whatever. My previous job, I was pushing papers around. It just felt like no purpose and whatever, or anything else you could be doing to make money. So I felt good about the way I was making money. But at the end of the day, I just felt way too much like I'm just trying to make the numbers go up, and for what reason? And there was a couple year phase there where I really got burned out and just really was questioning, why am I doing this, and just feeling very unfulfilled. And anyway, I just had a lot to kind of work through personally with that. And honestly, that led ultimately to a 1 year sabbatical where God just called me to step out of the business, walk away. And I'm like, I hope it's here when I come back. And through that, he did so much radical heart work in me. And so I came out of that with more clarity of vision and mission and what he created me to do and what our next steps are. Like, and I've been riding off that for the last 7 years. Like, it's been really, really helpful. But point is, yes, we've been up and down. We've tried a lot of different things within the business. At the beginning, I was trying different things kind of as a backup plan, you know, starting like an eBay store or sold guitar picks for a while, like just doing some random things just as kind of like a plan B in case this internet thing doesn't work, you know?
Totally.
But within the business, like we've tried a lot of different things that have failed. And like I said, like in terms of longevity, like you have to get used to that. Like you have to get used to just constant failure. And maybe some people have a better success rate than I do. But again, I feel like 80, 90% of what we try in terms of projects doesn't match my expectations and my hope. It just kind of gets scrapped. And then we focus on those things that do.
Yeah, no, it's such an unusual thing these days, particularly in the creator world, to have such longevity. And I even feel it myself, you know, 2-3 years into this particular project, I feel like there's something going on similar to the heart work you were talking about God doing during your sabbatical. That's happening personally for me with dad work.
Yeah.
But that long, man, especially with the shiny objects online. Mm-hmm. And man, I've had t-shirt stores. I've had FBA businesses. I've had AdSense, affiliate, coaching, like all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to find, other than maybe SEO and affiliate marketing in 3 or 4 different forms, one thing. And so my current sort of system right now of, I'm doing an agency and God says, get to work diligently doing the boring things. And I'm like, oh no. He's like, yeah, you got to work on this. So anyway, I'm just super curious, like, man, that's so much time in this one thing online. And that also leads me then into like the operations side. So at first you're on WordPress or, you know, whatever, Joomla, I don't know what it was back in the day, but you're on WordPress, whatever, blogging. And that was it, right? Like you put up your AdSense, you dork out in some forums for a while, and you hope to just get a little bit more next day. How has the operations changed now that it's like a legit business? Because I presume you're not just writing, you're doing podcasting, videos, you're teaching. What does your team structure day look like compared to when you started?
Yeah, it's completely different. Yeah, so one of the other things too that I talk about sometimes, I built this business while reading the 4-Hour Work Week. And so, and again, like I didn't know if that was possible, but I figured I'm going to put the filters in place to allow the business to become that. And that is so critically important. I had no idea how important that was, but basically having the end in mind of where you want to go forces you to ask different questions and creates different answers that will get you to completely different locations. So I remember early, in my late teens, I worked as a server at a restaurant, and there were restaurant owners who had another restaurant and they opened a new one. And I was on the wait staff when the restaurant opened. Okay. So, and what I will never forget is 6 months after this restaurant opened, the whole staff was celebrating because the owner took their first day off of work. So they worked every single day, basically 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. for 6 months. And I remember so like distinctly remembering, I will never build a business that will own me and control me like that. Like I absolutely do not want that. Like, because at that point I longed to start a business, but I was terrified of ever experiencing that. And so having that experience and then seeing the 4-Hour Work Week next to each other, I'm like, all right, I want that. How do I optimize for that? And so all the questions that I asked while I was building it in terms of, I can make money doing that. It's like, well, no, that doesn't pass that filter. You know, there's a lot of money that I left on the table because it didn't pass that filter. And so what happened because of that is a few years in, I found myself with the 4-Hour Work Week. And in terms of structure, it's like I, you know, got to the point where it's like, yeah, maybe I would write a couple hours a week and that was it. And I would take a month off and just walk away and earn more money in many cases than when I was working the entire month. Like it was a beautifully passive business. And but the interesting thing about that, and we're going to some tangents, but tell me to shut up if you want. But
great.
But I found like that was all part of my disillusionment and really just getting to a point where that became too much of the thing I was chasing was the passivity God having to give me the revelation that like I created you to work. Like I created you to work. Work is good. And you know, nothing against passive income. I'm a big fan of it. But at the same time, you don't want to just build passive income so that you do nothing. Like that, and that was part of my problem is like I was trying to figure out how to get to the point where I have to do nothing. And that shouldn't be the goal. It's like, how do I do the thing God has created me to do and allow passive income to kind of help make that happen? Today, it's very, very different. I work way more than 4 hours a week and I love doing it. I'm happy to do it. Our business is not nearly as passive. And I'm fine and happy about that. Like we have some passive aspects of it and I wouldn't mind having more, but it's, again, it would be approached differently. Now it's more, how do I free up more resources for us to do what God has called us to do rather than me just do nothing? In terms of a team, like we have 7 people on our team right now. So it's Linda and I who are mainly doing content creation. I'm overseeing everything. Of course, we have a full-time marketing guy who takes care of everything you would expect to fall under marketing. We have 2 different people kind of helping out with social media, helping out with podcast, editing and whatever, all that different stuff. And then we have someone we just brought on who's kind of working in our marketing area as well. So direct me from there where you want to go from there.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm mostly curious about like this content background to still doing content, but then like there's this whole structure and what that looks like. But I am curious about like SEO. I was just about to go look it up on Ahrefs, so I didn't have to ask. But what is the like what is the breakdown now with traffic? Is it still mostly SEO or is it like podcast or social or something like that that's actually taken over?
SEO has been off of our priority list for probably 7 years now. We made a massive rebrand 7, 8, I don't even know how many years ago. Basically from Christian PF, which was original, ChristianPF.com was original domain. New domain is Seed Time. That was like the kind of rebrand. And everything went fine with that rebrand. And I will say this, if anybody's ever considered a rebrand, like do not underestimate how long it will take for people to get caught up. And honestly, if you really had the old brand for a while, you might not ever get fully caught up. And so in our case, I remember 3 or 4 years into the rebrand, like I went to a conference where a lot of people knew me before and a lot of them knew me from the domain. And I was just really surprised how many people are clueless. It was like weird in the conversation because they didn't know who I was. My point is that like, there's a lot to a rebrand, but, we made that major rebrand, it was just a massive SEO debacle that we could not climb out from. And so we switched the domain. We hired all the best SEO experts we could find, like to make sure we were doing it right. And everybody said, yep, this is the way to do it, blah, 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 blah. And traffic dropped by 80% from Google overnight. And I'm like, all right, well, it's going to come back. And where it takes a couple months, blah, blah, blah. Like we go through that. It's like, nope. I'm calling all these experts for $300 or $400 an hour or whatever, like everybody to kind of help work through this and cannot get traffic back. So I ended up flipping the domain back to Christian PF. Traffic instantly comes back. And then we did that and ran 2 sites for a little bit. And I'm like, this is just a mess. It's like, and I finally realized like I am committed to this rebrand no matter what happens, whether Google's giving us traffic or not. And so we ultimately ended up flipping back to Seed Time as our main domain. Routing everything over there. Traffic drops again, never really came back. It was in that phase where I'm like, all right, I'm not even going to focus on SEO anymore. And so I pretty much quit focusing on SEO. So we just haven't done much there. In terms of the traffic breakdown, I really don't even know what it is at this point. We still get some search traffic. I think we probably get 30,000 visits from Google or something a month. But it's nothing like it was in the heyday. And then social sends a handful and I don't even know what else.
Man, well, that's like, I don't know if people really understand that, having come from like the SEO background. That I've had websites before, Google just goes change and you're done. That was one of the reasons why I sold all of my sites and got into something else, because that was just, it seemed a little bit more like the writing on the wall over the next couple of years, especially with AI coming in. But let's talk about that for a little bit, because you basically have to start a new business insofar as when you have a marketing channel that works, that's where all your traffic's and all your income and all this other kind of stuff is coming from. Suddenly, not only does the action that you take every day change, but the thought process and potentially even the feeling of the business changes, because now you're like, well, where am I going to get that next lead? How did you navigate that?
Yeah. No, like I said, at the very beginning, we were 90% of our income came from Google. 90% of our traffic came from Google, probably for the first 4 or 5 years. And that was always something that was very nerve-wracking to me, because we experienced multiple moments where Google changed the algorithm and we would lose 50% of our traffic overnight. And like that type of stuff is not fun, especially when, you know, this is how you pay your bills, you know? And we experienced that enough to know that like, I would love to diversify really some of our traffic streams a little bit. But again, it is that tension of, I know how to do Google. I know how to get more traffic there, but at the same time, they can chop it by 50% at any time or more, you know? And so that was always a delicate dance, because it's like, I know what to do here. Why should I stop working on this? But there's too much risk and whatever. So that was always a struggle, just kind of navigating that. But ultimately, the whole thing we talked about, the rebrand going wrong from an SEO perspective, created a lot of freedom that, because I've always felt handcuffed to Google. And I remember talking to a friend who did really well on Facebook. And, you know, got millions of visits from Facebook every month. And he was telling me how he structured his blog post. And I remember thinking, wait a minute. But Google won't like if you do that. He's like, oh, I don't care about Google. We don't even think about Google. I'm like, how do you not think about, like, because that was all I had ever done. It's like, how do you not think about what Google cares about your pages? My mind was blown. And from that point, I'm like, wait a minute. Is there a way that we could make this thing work without caring what Google thinks? And so that was the freedom that came out of that challenge, which was really, really good. And, that's the beautiful thing that God does. It's like you find yourself in some of these pickles sometimes, and he brings you to something that you never could have gotten yourself to any other way, you know?
Yes, 100%. Man, why did you guys rebrand?
There were a variety of reasons. I think Christian PF was like hey, I'm just going to throw up a website. What do I want to write about? Personal finance? Yeah, let's just say christianpersonalfinance.com. And then we got a shorter version, Christian PF. Like, it was just like, throw something up there. That was my first day of SEO school. Like, let's get the keywords in the domain type of thing. It's fine. It's just a little bit too on the nose. I wanted to build a little bit brand that was a little bit more, felt a little bit more like a brand. And there's a whole lot behind that as well. Like, we got snubbed for, basically with that domain, it was really hard for us to get any big media mentions, because they, you know, whatever, Forbes.com wouldn't say Bob Lodick of Christian Personal Finance says this, you know? And like, we had so many interviews like where they would use what we said and then not mention me. And I'm like, that just feels so shady. Like, why would you do that? But I understand it too. You know, it's like, they're a secular publication. They're not going to do that. And so anyway, Seed Time just helped with that a little bit. And that really wasn't that big of a deal, but there were a bunch of factors in there. Yeah.
Did that change how you saw the business? Because I know for me, like the move fast business suggestion is always like, just throw something out there. Doesn't matter. Just go get your first sale. And I get it. And I try to do that as much as I can. And I'm really like just emotionally invested in whatever the brand looks like, feels like, et cetera. Did that change with you? Were you like, oh man, this is so much bigger now. It almost frees you to think bigger, or did it not matter to you emotionally?
No, it mattered. And that was part of it too. Just having a wider directionally of where I felt like we could go. And again, like a lot of this was the feel of it. Like, how do I make something that feels better of what we're trying to create in the feel, and especially in the Christian personal finance space? Like, we're trying to do something that feels different than anything I've ever seen before. And that's hard because there's these natural grooves in the mud that your tires just want to navigate to. And we're trying to break out of that, not just for us, but also for other, the mind share of everyone else. And so there's no doubt that, yes, it changed the feel in a good way for us. And, you know, and some of that was overshadowed by some of the obstacles of doing it, because it wasn't easy by any means. It's obviously easy just to redirect a domain, but, you know, we had been around for 4 or 5 years, and some of those years were big years in terms of big traffic years and years that, you know, you might have been on the website reading the article or whatever else. And so anyway, so it was a step backwards in a lot of ways with, again, awareness of the brand and things like that. But ultimately, if I viewed it as if we're going to be doing this the next few decades, it's worth biting the bullet and doing it now, you know?
No, that makes sense. Okay. I would love to finish with, you know, the question that we started to talk about. I created you to work, but I would also love, no pressure, doesn't have to be an answer here. Are there business ideas, industries, things business nerd wise you're really excited about right now that, you know, if you didn't have this going on, you're like, oh man, would love to start a business over there doing that? Or maybe just like, hey, if someone started this personal finance app, like, man, that would make my life so much easier. Is there anything that comes to mind that might help someone who's about to make that step into entrepreneurship but hasn't actually got the idea yet?
Yeah. I mean, the obvious thing is AI and how all these pieces are going to connect. And it's been really fun just watching, you know, this kind of first year or so of how AI is affecting business and what we're doing. And I think it surprised me with how it's moving slower in a lot of ways and then faster in a lot of ways than I thought. And I think that's going to continue. And so people are worried about AI replacing their jobs, and it will, and it's going to eliminate a lot. But I don't, it's not going to be like this big brick wall that just, you know, happens overnight, everything drops off a cliff or whatever. But what I see it as in the next few years is turning, helping us all become, I don't know, giving us superhero strength with a lot of different things and just amplifying what we're already decently good at. And so that's the thing, that's the big opportunity that, like, I would be, if I were starting over, like, looking at that, like, how can I take whatever I'm doing and use this tool to just make me five or 10 times more effective than I was 2 years ago? Because AI has the potential to do that in a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. I think there are a lot of people who have 40-hour jobs who, if they get smart about how to use AI, 48-hour jobs or, you know, freelance stuff that takes them 40 hours, if they get smart about how to do that, that they could cut that in half or by 90%, you know? And I think that's where there's some massive leverage. And it's still very much in its infancy, and it's still messy and sloppy. And I think that's going to just keep a lot of people away for a little bit. But we reached a threshold where it's like, all right, we can see the power, we can see the potential of what is possible here. And so, like, that's where I would be leaning. And not, and I know it's not getting super specific, but it does apply to a lot of different things. So that's just kind of a general thing I would think. But another thing that I'm thinking about more and more, and this is completely off the online space, that we may end up doing something like this, but there's a company called Getaway. Are you familiar with Getaway by the way?
No.
Anyway, so it's a glamping company. And basically, okay, they go and buy whatever, 300 acres somewhere, and we'll put 40 to 100 tiny homes that are nicely designed. And they put just little campsites on them. So they're tiny homes. It's basically a bed and a tiny little kitchen in a bathroom. And then you have fire outside and a hammock and whatever. And so it just elevates the camping experience. And it is just really nice. And they've done a great job with it. And I've just been thinking about that as a business model, and I really like it. And I've seen a couple other companies like start popping up doing similar things. And I think as we become, like, part of the main motivation for them was just being able to disconnect from the wired world that we're all in. And this is a way to do that, that I think people are going to begin craving more and more over the next decade or two. I just need to get away. I just need to get into the woods. Let me just get alone, whatever the thing is. And so they just do a fantastic job. And so that model, I think, could be replicated because of websites like HipCamp. For anybody doesn't know, it's like Airbnb for campers. And so you can go on there and rent someone's backyard, like a little section in their backyard. My son and I actually did that. This guy owned a mountain, or a lot of his land was on this mountain over in East Tennessee or something. My son and I went and camped. We got to drive to the top of his mountain and probably 4,000 or 5,000 feet in elevation. And we could see for miles. And it was one of the most amazing experiences because there's no one around. We're literally out in the middle of nowhere on top of this mountain. And anyway, point is, we rented it for whatever, $50 a night or something like that. Like, it's so anyway, there's a lot there that I would probably be doing if I weren't doing this.
Man, no, that's really good. And I think both of those extremes are probably where we're going. You've got AI on the one side, which I think there's a lot of arbitrage to be done. If you're still charging full-time hours, but you can do it in 20 hours and nobody's going to catch on for the next 5-10 years about that, great opportunities. But also, as that goes up and as impersonal content increases, which for you and me, for a bunch of other content creators, we're going to have to differentiate ourselves by being personal. And I think what you said about the real life thing is that more people will value real life disconnected things at a much higher premium. And so if 90% of the world is digital, AI, whatever, it's like suddenly that guy who's actually going to shake your hand, serve you at the bar, whatever, you're going to pay more for that. You're going to pay more for nature. So I agree with that totally.
Yep.
Well, the thing I wanted to end with was this idea of being created to work, because I am literally going through this right now, which is crazy again, how God works. I don't know. You're just in this little orbit for me right now. I recently realized, as I was slowly reading through Genesis, that yes, God put us in the garden to tend the garden, and he then cursed the land that we would work with painful toil. I have found myself rebelling against the initial curse by looking for purely passive income for the last 12 years of my entrepreneurial journey. And only in the last couple of months have I gone, oh, I'm rebelling. It's always going to be here. But what that means for me is that the security of income and passive income forever is actually not the security my heart longs for. And I thought it was. But what that's finally pointed to in my life is, for the first time ever, I've longed for heaven, man. Like, I've always, when the pastor's like, oh, Jesus is coming back, I can't wait, I'm like, life's pretty sweet, man. Like, it's fun. I love this kind of stuff. But for the first time, it's like, oh, I'm never, ever going to get past this hurdle of painful toil until I am in the arms of God. Do you want to talk about that a little bit in terms of what you've experienced? Because this is blowing my mind, and I don't know if anyone else cares, but I do. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for me, we talked about earlier, the passive income became an idol for me. And I think it is for a lot of people. I think it is for a lot of people in the church. And one of the questions I try to come back to myself and ask myself all the time, so why am I chasing this financial goal? Like, what is the thing that I actually want? And if I really uncover the deep depth of it, many times it has been because I don't want to have to trust God. Because I don't want to have to trust him as my provider. I just want to see that this thing is coming in. And that's painful to admit, but it's really freeing to admit that as well, because you can ask God to help you with it, you know? And the passive income thing, like you, I sought it and I chased it and I got it. And I think by God's grace, he took a lot of it away because it was hindering my ability to trust him. And which is so weird, but like, that's just what it did to me. Like, I just found myself trusting in our website, trusting in our passive streams and everything else. And it just harmed my relationship with him. That's just what it comes down to. And it's like, and it doesn't need to do that. I'm not dogging passive income, because I am a big fan of it. But the heart posture behind it is so important. We have a workshop that we do called Passive with Purpose. And we talk about this a lot at the beginning, because I think so many people do this wrong. And they're like, well, Bob, I'll figure that out later. Let me just make the passive income first. It's like, no, you got to get the heart part right. if you don't get the heart posture right first, like, and again, this comes back to like what we're saying, like being an authority in the thing. It's like, I've experienced this. Please let me save you some pain and trust me. I know you just want to get the passive income, but trust me, you want your heart right before you do this. Because yeah, it's too easy for it to become an idol and something that you're just trying to replace whatever for, you know, and there's great intentions behind it. And I, yeah. Yeah. So that's just kind of been our experience. Yeah. You can direct me from there.
Man, no, it's so of God. It's so not what you would think. It's so countercultural. And I think that's beautiful because it really does elevate and isolate God to what I think his rightful place is.
Yeah.
Like, this is what everybody wants. This is what we all long for. This is 4-hour work week. Man, devoured that. Lived overseas for 2 years with my family because I have all the freedom in the world. And it just, every time I look back now, I've only been a Christian for 2 years. I look back and I go, oh, that was God telling me I wasn't ready. And I tried to do the same thing again. I wasn't ready. Tried to do the same thing again. Got a little bit further. No, then he cut me down farther.
Yep.
And it's like, man, what if I just followed what it says in, I think, Proverbs, to work diligently, to put away, you know, shiny objects, for lack of a better term, and then to trust in him with all my heart. Like, man, that's so different because, especially in this modern Western world, and again, cliche, whatever, but like, this is, I think, really important for people to understand, important for me to understand, like, it's not the money thing. And there's so much pride trapped up in that. Like, I want to make sure that people see that I'm successful because I've got this online business.
Yeah.
But like you said, I've got a mentor of mine who was approached by a very wealthy man. He said, "You're lucky." And this mentor of mine was like, "Why? Don't feel very lucky right now. I'm looking for work." And he says, "Well, because I've never had to trust God with my provision." Mm-hmm. It's like, man, if our purpose is to walk with God, that is a detrimental place to be. So maybe like a last question here is, philosophically or in your own life, tactically, how have you balanced? I want to make money. I feel excited making money, but also like, God, let me see this as monopoly money that as a good father, you're letting me play with. I want to be close to you. Has there been any, I don't know what it is, man, like a prayer life or a book or something that you just think about to keep the narrow way? Because there's paths, there's ditches, I should say, on either side.
Yeah. Well, I can't take credit for this, but this is something that God gave us that really helped us a lot. It was about a decade ago. We had paid off all of our debts at that point, credit card debts. We were making a lot of financial progress, paid off student loans, paid off car loans, had nothing else except for the house. And I was racing to pay off our mortgage. And I remember going to pray in this field near our house. And I was walking around this field praying and asking God, "Can you help us pay off this mortgage faster?" And I had a plan that was going to be about 3 or 4 years to get this house paid off. And so I'm asking God, "Can we do it faster?" You know, I'm typical American, you know. And and I will never forget, like, that day he spoke something to my heart that, I mean, has changed my life ever since. And he said, "If you really want to see me move in your finances, I want you to begin giving your age as a percentage of your income." So I was 31 at the time. And so that meant jumping from 11% to about 31%. And so I'm just like, what is this? Where is this coming from? This is just crazy. And that wrecked my plan because my 3.5-year mortgage payoff plan is now shot, because God wants me to give all our money away. And I was kind of angry at him too, because I'm like, I just came to you asking to get this thing paid off faster. Now you're telling us to give all our money away. Like, what's the deal here? And anyway, wrestling through that and praying, I finally, you know, realized, all right, the mortgage payoff thing had kind of become an idol for me. And I need to lay that on the altar and I need to obey. And whatever happens, if it takes us 20 years to pay it off, then great. You know, this is what God wants and we'll do it. So we began doing that month, began giving 31% of our income. And I went to the spreadsheet to figure out how long it's going to take to pay off our mortgage. Now it's like 10 plus years or something. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll do it for the glory of God, you know? And what was so crazy, Kurt, is 10 months later, that mortgage was paid in full. And I am just like, I'm dumbfounded, like absolutely blown away at what God did. Like our business began taking off. Money was coming from all over the place. Like it was just unbelievable. And it was just a wonderful illustration for him, just a perfect way for him to like prove his faithfulness through our obedience to something, again, that didn't make any sense. And so we began doing that then, and then we've continued that ever since. So it's been 31, 32%, 33%, tracking right along with our age. I'm 43 now. And what's been so beautiful about that is it has created, this is God in all of his wisdom, created the perfect amount of tension so that, because prior to that, we had too much. And I was sloppy with our spending. I didn't have to trust God, or it felt like I didn't. I did. I just didn't know I did. You know what I mean? Because even if you have a ton, like the reality is like you have to trust him. You just aren't trusting him because there's a bunch of money in the bank or whatever. And so I wasn't trusting him as much because it seemed like there was just plenty of extra sitting there. And this eroded a lot of that away. And it stripped us down to a lot more financial tension in a good amount of healthy amount of boundaries. Like, because prior to that point, you know, it wasn't like insane, like I was buying Lambos and yachts, but like anything I came to my mind on Amazon, like at any point, it's like I just bought it. I didn't think anything of, I never had to tell myself no. Whereas after that, in obedience to him, if we're giving away 35 or 37 or 43% of our income, like it just puts us in a tighter financial position to where it's like, oh, I have to say no to myself once in a while, which is really healthy. Really, really healthy. And I think it's really bad if you never have to say no to yourself. And so that thing alone has been so life-altering for us because it's kept us in a place of having to depend on God, even as income went up. It's also kept us in a place of being, of having a ridiculous abundance of amount of money to be able to give. And so by far, our biggest bank account, we have it separated out, is every month, when we get paid, 43% of our income goes into this account, you know, and we'll, you know, send some to our church and we'll send some to some charities, but a lot of it just sits in there and it waits for God to say, hey, see that person over there? I want you to go do that or give them this or whatever. And so that account is by far our biggest one. And so we have a vacation fund, we have a one, but the giving one is the one that's huge and it's sitting there. It's all the dollars in it. And I love that because it orients our biggest priority in life, we want to give away millions of dollars of our lives. That's, you know, our big goal. It orients us with that and it gives us a fuel to do that while curbing our appetite and keeping us from, yeah, just leaning too far in the wrong direction. So that one framework has been life-changing for us.
Dude, praise God, man. That is such an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that. And especially yeah, in that light, like I read that before, but the way that it was tied to the question, man, like, ooh, convicting. So thank you. This has been a lot of fun, actually. I would have loved it just because like closing the circle of you making me my first dollar in a sense. So thank you very much. Where can I send people to learn more about you and everything you guys do?
Sure. Yeah. Seedtime.com is our site. We have all our courses on there. And we have a book called Simple Money, Rich Life as well. So yeah, they're at Seedtime on Instagram and stuff too.
Cool. I'll put all that in the show notes, Bob. Thank you so much for the time. This has been amazing.
Yeah, man. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.